Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We're getting an update from Monero Alamos, traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol MAI and on the OTCQX under the symbol MAIFF. We are chatting with the president, Doug Ramshaw. Now, Monero Alamos continuing to advance the company's three projects towards essentially production at each of these assets, the Santana Open Pit Heap Leach Mine in Sonora, that is already in production. The company proved their model by moving that first asset into that state. And now we're going to focus a bit more on the Cerro de Oro Oxide Gold Project. Now, this project, as you've mentioned in the past, Doug, really could be the crowning jewel for the company in terms of its production profile. Broadly, give us an update here on the Cerro de Oro project on some surface rights, what we can expect in terms of bringing this online for the second producing asset.
Absolutely. Corey and Chad, thanks for having me back on. And I can thankfully say that we've got those surface rights. So it's been a labor of love for us, a labor of patience for our shareholders. But it was an absolute critical, and I think probably one of the most significant catalysts we'll have this year to get those surface rights, because as I think I've mentioned to your viewers before, Mexico does permitting correctly. They insist that you have your social license to even embark on the permitting process. So that's the surface rights now that we have in place. That will allow us to complete some last surveys that we needed to have the surface rights to actually do those surveys. We're hoping to have permits in the next month or two. And then our permitting consultants down in Mexico are expecting about an 8-month permitting process for Cerro de Oro. That would allow that project to have the permits sufficient for construction activities to commence sometime in Q2 of next year, all being well. Certainly first half of next year, which could, you know, ultimately with about a 6-month build time, see Cerro de Oro come on stream right around the end of next year. So hugely impactful for a company that is, you know, I don't want to say, I use the word boasted, but, you know, boasted that its business model is about bringing mines on with low capex sequentially and in rapid order. And I think the key to that is obviously we've got the first mine up and running. Let's, you know, when's the second one going to happen? And that should happen next year. So really excited about that development for the company.
Yeah, Doug, I think you're so right that the model was to bring on a series of mines, because then you have Fortuna waiting in the wings as mine number three. And you knocked it out of the park. You got Santana up and running as planned for a low capex build. It's a pretty simple mine. Your team has done it before. And now everybody's been waiting on this mine number two, and you're finally there with the permitting process started and with these surface rights. But you made a great point recently in another interview where you talked about inflation and how that's impacting new mines getting built, and how because of the small capex you need for these, you're kind of in a different boat, and it differentiates Monero Alamos from some of those big projects. I'd love you to unpack that for investors.
Absolutely. I embrace the challenges facing the industry at large right now, because I believe that we are actually remarkably insulated from them. We're certainly not immune, but when you're talking about, you know, capex on building mines in the 25 million, well, 10 million for Santana, Cerro de Oro is going to be a bigger mine. It's probably 25 million US. I mean, if we saw a 20% increase in capital costs associated with that build, you know, it's $5 million. I mean, it's annoying, you know, you want to do everything as cheaply as possible, but it doesn't suddenly create some major funding shortfall. And we've seen that in the sector where companies have embarked on major multi-hundred-million-dollar builds only to see, you know, huge cost escalation. And it kind of bit of poker parlance, you're kind of pot committed when you've committed $400-500 million on a project. And now your remaining capital has not gone up by $100 million, gone up by another $200 or $300 million. And you've seen those companies really suffer in this market, because there's obviously a huge overhang of how are you going to meet that amount of money that's still required to complete your mine. And So I think Santana was a 10 million US build. Cerador was a 25 million US build. Fortuna waiting in the wings, it's probably, with some cost escalation from the PEA in 2018, maybe a 35 million US build. You know, any of those projects have a 20 or 30% increase in capital costs, which we're not really forecasting right now. It doesn't suddenly create an overhang of how are they going to meet that funding gap. And it's even more supported by the fact that with Santana up and running, we're going through the ramp up right now. We should have commercial production in the second half of the year. That funding gap can be self-funded as well. So yeah, I'll embrace the challenges facing the sector right now. I think it actually does help further highlight why the Minera business model is a very smart business. It was a smart business model, I think, anyway, but it's especially in light of rising costs, it's really turning a spotlight on these bootstrap low capex projects, of which that's what we kind of specialize in.
So Doug, when people hear about just how cheap it is to build these mines, I think they also carry that over and say, well, the mine life must not be that long, or it must not produce that much gold or end product, whatever it might be. Take us through what the mine life is on these assets and any expansion potentials, please.
Yeah, I mean, I think for Santana on the starter resource, which we'll have out soon, you know, we'll be able to demonstrate 6 to 7 years initial mine life. Cerro de Oro will be the same. They've all got expansion potential beyond that. You know, Fortuna is a high-grade open pit. The reason it's third in line is it's got a five-year mine life, and we'll just want to use cash flow from the first two just to drill that out a little bit more before building it. But no, I mean, we're very happy with having a starter mine life of 6 to 7 years. The key for any project that we build is, can we see how, if we get it up and running, you know, we can redeploy that cash flow to expand mine life and expand the overall production profile? And that's a key criteria for all our projects, and we think all of them have that potential. So 6 to 7 years initial mine life is still a hearty runway for developing the additional resources that will both grow mine life and production profile. And in terms of production profile, Fortuna's probably starts at 50,000 ounces a year if we follow the PEA profile for it. Santana, you know, is the starter motor for the whole business model. It's a 30,000 ounce kind of operation as it gets up and running, and probably can grow to 40 or 50 in due course. Cerro de Oro will exceed both of those. And, you know, even on a base case, we're probably looking at a 60 to 65,000 ounce a year operation that, again, will have been built for roughly 25 million US. And there's an upside case that's considerably higher than that. When we come out with the PEA for Cerro de Oro, we will allow the maiden resource to inform that PEA. So that was a 630,000 ounce resource. You know, it will drive an initial base 6.5 year mine life using 1450 gold, because I think it's very important for us to show that our projects work in tougher market conditions, not just have optionality to higher gold prices. I don't think a business model has the right foundation if you need to run PEAs at $1,700, $1,800 gold. Even though I think $1,700 plus gold prices are here to stay, I think it's very important to demonstrate the resilience of your project during the cyclical nature of this wonderful commodity that tortures us so. So, yeah, I think very healthy, and we're looking forward to obviously presenting that PEA to the market in the coming months.
Well, Doug, one of the things that we focus on our show when we're looking at producers is what we call growth-oriented producers, not just growth-oriented in ramping up production, as you just outlined, because obviously if you go from 30,000 to 40,000 at Santana, and then you drop in another 60,000 to 65,000 at Cerro de Oro, that puts you at 100,000 ounces a year production. And if you add another 50 on top of that with Fortuna, you know, you can see the exponential growth in production. But there's also the exploration side. And you just put out some good news recently here on the 23rd of June, where you're doing some regional exploration around your Cerro de Oro project. So maybe just talk about not just the production growth, but there's still potential for exploration upside.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think our business model is definitely building a sequence of mines that expand the production profile through bringing on new mines. But each of those mines and each of those areas can grow themselves. And that can have a compounding effect on those kind of production, that production profile you talk about. Certainly, the goal is to get to 150,000 ounces first, you know, and then grow from there. In terms of the potential of Cerro de Oro, this was a whole district that was really last looked at in the early 90s, when obviously a very different gold price environment than we're in now. So people, you know, Noranda Gold that discovered Cerro de Oro was not interested in sub 1 gram gold. We love sub 1 gram gold in a heap leach environment. And Echo Bay, that we found some old data about 6 kilometers southwest of our project on our claims, they were looking at higher grade lead, zinc, silver with some higher grade gold targets down there and weren't interested in a very large disseminated gold system that, you know, we've traced over 1 kilometer on our claims. And, you know, of 0.2 to 1 gram material with peaks of 18 grams. And so, you know, I think it's interesting because we're able to start unlocking a district for its current potential based on prevailing commodity prices, which make a lot of this kind of 0.5 to 1 gram material very exciting if it has the right metallurgy to look at it from an open pit heap leach perspective. So we're always looking at the exploration upside. We want to get the mines up and running and ensure that exploration is delivered, but delivered in a shareholder-friendly manner through redeploying cash flow to grow these assets.
Okay, so of course, always looking to grow the assets, expand on mine life, but hey, you get them up and running first, you generate that cash flow, you can internally fund that. Let's talk a little bit about the financings of the company, because it was just a couple weeks ago, June 23rd, that the company announced a little over $4 million financing of only common shares at a price of 55 cents per share. Doug, how did this financing come together? You announced that it's already fully subscribed. Kudos to you for being able to raise money in this environment, but how did this financing come together, please?
Yeah, I mean, we're very capital conscious in all aspects of our business. So, I mean, we last had gone to the market in September 2020, and prior to that, you know, another year before that. So we rarely tap the market, and we definitely want to do it in a shareholder friendly way. So I think over the last 4 years, we've done 4 raises. They've all been straight shares. We have no warrants outstanding on our company whatsoever. And there won't be broker warrants on this deal because there were no finder's fees on it, no broker warrants. So we will keep that record of being warrant free. And I think that that's great because that can create an artificial cap on the stock that can hurt shareholders. So we're always trying to do things in a shareholder friendly way. I mean, at the time, the stock was 52 cents. We announced that financing above market at 55 cents, and it's cornered by just 2 placees, an existing institutional shareholder that wanted to increase their position, and myself, also an existing large shareholder that put $500,000 committed alongside them, which will take my holdings up to 7.5 million shares when it closes. So yeah, just 2 placees. And the reason we did it was I'd had a discussion internally that, you know, a bit of a champagne problem, first world problem, in that we get the very news that we want with Cerro de Oro, which is going to start allowing us to talk a lot more about Cerro de Oro over the second half of this year. And it's also going to involve us spending money there to make sure that it is brought on in as timely manner as possible. When you have a project that can be that beneficial to the free cash generation of the company, could you have done all that funding out of the free cash that we expect out of Santana later this year? Yes, but then you're delaying things by being self-funding. It was such a modest raise that to keep Cerro de Oro on track, it just felt like it was the right thing to do. And kind of looked at it internally and thought about the opportunity cost of waiting And if that was going to push Cerro de Oro back by 6 months in terms of when it can come on stream, it didn't feel like it made sense. And so, I mean, it represented 1.7% dilution to the company. At the time, it was priced at what was our volume weighted average price for 2022. So I thought fairly priced. Obviously, at a premium to market, I'd say very fairly priced at the time. I'd love to have done it higher. I would have happily paid higher if I'd paid higher for other stock that I bought in the company. But it was very, very nice to see the positive reaction to that amongst industry peers that we were able to get it done. And I think it underscores the power of the Minera brand and business model that we were able to achieve that, and we were able to get the support of a shareholder that has been loyal with this company for a very long time and continues to see the value proposition ahead.
Well, Doug, hats off to your team for getting that financing done with no warrants and at a premium to market. I guess just wrap us up quickly with the key news you want investors focus on as we round out 22 and head into the beginning of 2023.
Yeah, I think for us, we're still looking at what we can add to the portfolio. We want to be a growth company beyond that kind of production profile we talked about earlier. I think probably now the next big catalyst is two of them. There'll be commercial production at Santana in the second half of the year. There's also likely sometime in Q3, there should be the PEA on Cerro de Oro, which will really, I think, be one of those economic studies. We see them all too often that, all they seem to be are selling events for shareholders into some kind of liquidity that's created from them. I think that we will demonstrate Cerro de Oro to be one of the outliers of an economic study that is very well received by the market. If it's anything close to how we're currently internally modeling it, it will be a big catalyst for showing that potential and showing that low cost business model, both on the CapEx and op cost side of the business next year and beyond. So really excited about that, and look forward to maybe coming back on and taking you through those numbers when we've brought them out to the market.
Absolutely, Doug. A lot of good stuff happening with Minera Alamos, even in this market environment that we all know has been pretty tough for really every sector out there. Please keep in touch on the back of some more news if anybody has any follow-up questions for Doug regarding any of the assets within Minera Alamos. Please email us. And in full disclosure, Shad is a shareholder of the company. So Doug, thank you again for your time. We appreciate the update, and we'll have you back on the back of some more news.
Thanks, gentlemen.